Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Tuning the Bow, a parenting podcast focused on the discipleship aspect of it. My name is Matthew Wilbanks. I am your host here, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host Tim Rose. Tim, we have already talked about the Super Bowl, so we don't have to discuss it in the intro of this podcast.
But... no, we didn't talk about this aspect though, and I think this actually deals with this podcast just slightly, so it's okay. He gets us. Now let me just say on the offset here, I don't think I was as offended by what everyone else in Christianity is offended by.
Let me
give what I think may be some helpful context here, and then what I was actually ultimately offended by. So the ad, I don't know if any of y'all saw it, but it was basically a bunch of different images of people washing one another's feet. Mm-hmm. The most kind of, I guess, out there of the images was probably the lady washing another lady's feet in front of what I'm going to call an abortion clinic, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'll say on this is that I think it's significant to remember, for those of us who are believers, especially those types who would be watching something like this, that ad's not meant for us. Mm-hmm. You're already a believer. That being said, it is there is an equivocation there that I think doesn't truly exist. Did Jesus wash sinners' feet? Yes, he did. Did he wash people who did things that separated them from God? Oh, yeah, he surely did. Mm-hmm. The imagery, though, I think at times is led to try and put us in the thought of, oh, Jesus accepts these things.
Right.
That's never even part of the original story. Mm-hmm. Jesus's washing of Peter's feet is not saying, hey, Peter, I love that you're going to cut that guy's ear off. No, it's just that he loves Peter. He still calls Peter to live a better life. He still calls him to do different things. So there's that issue. But here's my big issue with it. And I know that everyone else cried to me the wrong reason. Mm-hmm. To me, there was one image unequivocally that I could not stand from that commercial. And that was when it gets to the word Jesus and it highlights the us. I would argue of the blasphemy that there may be, which actually I will say from a commercial perspective. Now, Matt, you know, I'm there to watch the game. I don't really care about the commercials that much. Plus, right. I have children who never let you watch anything you want to watch. From the commercial standpoint, most were pretty okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this year was a year where everyone went, let's not lose billions of dollars of business on the commercials.
Yes.
Shocking. Now, by the way, it works. But the general statement that I would say just quite clearly and unequivocally is the best part about Jesus is not us. The best part about Jesus is that he is not us. Mm-hmm. His being us is just good for us because it means that we get to be saved, that he can be the substitutionary atonement for us. But in no way, shape, or form is the best part about Jesus the us part. Mm-hmm. And to me, of all the images I saw last night, that was the one that got me so mad. Do I think that Jesus would be willing to wash the feet of somebody who either had an abortion or worked at an abortion clinic? Yeah, for sure. He's a really loving, forgiving God. He would also call them to live a different lifestyle afterwards. But he would be more than willing to do that. I boldly reject any sort of statement that it all even insinuates slightly that a good part of Jesus is us. Mm. We're the reason he went to the cross. Mm. That was our part in the story. So that was what upset me from that commercial. But otherwise, it was a heck of a game.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And Matt, you hated, I know, the first half. I actually think the first half was pretty normal. A lot of times in Super Bowls, teams play tight. I thought that's all that was. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. The second half and ultimately the fourth quarter and overtime were fantastic. Yes. I mean, had you on your seat. But Matt, what were your thoughts on the Super Bowl? And then we'll get into our actual topic today.
Yes. See, I'm going to talk about the halftime show because that was my hot topic for the friends I was watching with. And I'm going to say this, and that's all I'm going to say. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to watch the halftime show because it is going to probably offend you in some way. Like, the last time I ever saw a halftime show that there was almost nothing offensive was the Bruno Mars halftime show. And I don't even remember when that was. That was a fun show. And then everything else, there's always been something that people have gotten riled up about. And I do not like getting on social media during the Super Bowl, mainly because everybody will start spouting their opinion of what needs to happen. And, oh my gosh, that was the worst thing I've ever seen. Or, you know, fill in the blank. But I did. And again, everyone's pointing out his lyrics are so bad. Oh my gosh. Take a step back and think to the lyrics of the songs you listened to when you were growing up. There's been songs in all of our cultures and all of our generations that have glorified sexual immorality. A big one of what Usher likes to sing about. You can turn off your TV for 15 minutes because, especially in modern football, the halftime report doesn't add anything or take away anything. It's just people talking about it.
It says nothing. listening to somebody effectively like a Jason Garrett talking about what they need to fix. Oh my gosh. And don't even get me started on Tony Romo.
you don't have to. Like, there are certain things you can't avoid, but you can avoid the Super Bowl. It's completely okay. Lots of people do all across the world anyways, because they are normally asleep. But that's my two cents. But anyways, yes, no, the wrong team won. But it's okay, because like I was talking to Tim before, the Texas Rangers were World Series champions, and that's the only thing that matters in the world of sports at this current moment.
That they are. Also, as just one last minor point on the Super Bowl, if you notice that your local youth pastor decides not to do a Super Bowl watch party or decides to do one, cut him some slack.
Please.
So we don't do a Super Bowl watch party because I refuse to get involved. But whenever you do one, there's either one of two things that is demanded, and it normally both are demanded by both sides. One side says, we cannot watch the halftime show. It's debauchery. You need to either play one of those I Am Second videos or give a sermon. Now, let me just tell you something.
No way.
There is no greater of a loser feeling than to preach a sermon in the middle of the Super Bowl. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to pay attention. Then you have the other side that says, well, these kids already listen to that music, so why would it be that? Why are you making a stand if you don't want to watch it? When you're like, well, I don't really want to show my students strippers on the television. So anyway, your youth pastor decides. If he has a thought-out answer, which normally when I meet youth pastors, it's either we don't do anything, which is what I've elected to do, or we do and we have two rooms, and if you want to watch the halftime show there, and if your mom hates you watching the halftime show, you can be in here and we'll play board games. Either way, just cut him some slack.
Granted, because
that is not something he learned in seminary, I guarantee you.
There was that one year in college when the halftime show came on, and we went and played volleyball, and we played volleyball the rest of the Super Bowl game.
We did. Yeah, Tom Brady's Super Bowls were a thing, weren't they, man?
They were.
You know,
Patrick Mahomes was getting there.
At least he does it interesting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Anyways, Super Bowl is a thing. That's now half of our episode almost.
All right.
But that's okay, because there are also, that's an important thing to talk about. is your TV does not control you. You control your TV. Always remember that. But now the actual topic. Tim, finding family friends as parents is what you texted me. And I was like, what does this mean? So would you please explain what we're going to talk about for the second half of this episode?
Yeah. So, I mean, anytime, you know, we're raising our kids, of course, there's all these cliches, like it takes a village or whatever. And Matt, you and I both kind of agree that those are probably overblown.
Yeah.
However, that being said, we would agree, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that it is incredibly significant to have people that you trust around you and around your kids. Mm-hmm. And not only for even just the most base desire of needs of, like, at times Mary and I want someone to take care of our two kids so that we can have a date, so that we don't have to deal with them for 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And those are, you know, those are good reasons. But as well, you also, we recognize what Matt, you and I might call the homeschooler syndrome.
Mm.
We recognize that if you grow your kids up only in your house with your shemadel, and when you take them outside, they're to talk to no one, and they're supposed to stay on their little rope with two hands on it at all times. That, well, how do I put this in a way that's tactful? Your kids end up weird.
Yeah.
Like really weird. And not like weird as in, like, I'm weird for Jesus weird. Like, weird as in they're not going to be able to procreate weird. Because they don't know how to talk to anyone who's not on the rope with them. And it's really awkward to ask a girl to come hold a rope so you can walk in Walmart together.
Yeah. And honestly, we speak from experience. We went to Bible college, and there were some homeschool kids that socially they adapt well to other people going on. They have, you know, they had the co-ops, they had all that. This is not, by the way, this is not a knock on homeschooling one bit. This is a knock on a certain type of homeschooling.
Yeah. And to that point, that's Mary and I's top option right now for our boys is homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this is not let's go at homeschoolers. This is a completely different conversation.
Right. But you have those that adapt socially. And they're able to, you know, have conversations, you know, make friends and all that. And then you have the Calvinist kids. No, I'm just kidding. You've got the kids that are just sometimes with these sheltered, you know, birdcage kind of living that some of these homeschool kids go through is hard. It's hard for them, and we can always point to the parents as being really one of the causes for this. Yep. And so this is something we want to address. We want to address what does it look like to choose friends, but also what does it look like biblically when it comes to, you know, choosing the people around you. So, Tim, you are the leader of this, you know, conversation. So where are we starting?
Yeah. And as we said, none of this is saying you can't homeschool.
Right.
That's not at all what we're saying. What we're saying is that there needs to be a process we go through, which, and weirdly, I'm taking some of this, like, even from the ministry safe training we go to. But mm-hmm. you're going to put people on the fence that guard your kids from the world. But it's really significant to determine who's on that fence. Because obviously, if you bring in someone who is detrimental to your kids, not just physically, not just, you know, in any way, like a legal way, but if you bring in someone on your trusted adults mm-hmm. who is untrustworthy, this has massive ramifications. So as I sit here and think about this, I want to take a look at 1 Samuel 17:18. Area. We're not going to read all of 1 Samuel 17. It's a very popular story and one that Matt will go, why are we talking about that story? But really the crux is chapter 18, the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So the 1 Samuel 17 is a story of David and Goliath. Now, most of us know this story, but The simple part is there's a big giant dude named Goliath. He's cursing at the Israelites. He's cursing down God. David comes to meet his brothers who are in the Israelite army. He notices that Goliath is cursing at God, and he goes, "Ain't anybody going to stop him?" And they all look at him and go, "No, that dude's big." And David says, "Oh, come on. If God's on our side, we got nothing to fear." He grabs his trusty slingshot. He zings one straight into Goliath. Goliath dies. They then go and capture and take out the rest of the Philistines. But at the very end, David, so this is starting verse 55. Now, when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this young man?" And Abner asked, "By your life, O king, I do not know." The king said, "You inquire to whose son this is." So when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. Did I just read that section to say that part? Yes, because it's awesome. Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." Chapter 18. Now, it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day, took him being David, that day, and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself, excuse me, I'm flipping pages, of the robe that was on him and gave it to David, with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and prospered. And Saul set him over the men of war. And it was pleasing in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So I think what we see in connecting these stories properly together is that Jonathan and David become friends, based in part because Jonathan sees David's faithfulness to God and his respect and humility to the king. So as we broaden this conversation to ourselves, when we say, okay, what kind of people do I want around my kids? I think we have to start saying, who do I see that's faithful? Who do I see that is faithful to God? Obviously, unless you are one of our sweet homeschoolers who's never been in a social atmosphere, if you've been in one, you already know how to basically determine who you're going to be friends with and not. Matt and I, we have general people that we're predisposed to be better friends with or not. Like, I can tell you that we have some people that are of our age and with kids our age, and the men are what I would call more effeminate. And Matt, as you know, like, we're not going to be friends because socially I can't deal with that. Even if we might agree on a lot of stuff, I'm not going to be able to deal with that. And I'm going to get in trouble with my wife for making fun of that guy when we go home, which is not right of me, but it's what I'm going to do anyway. Like, I just know it. It is what always seems to happen. So, like, there's always social elements, but we're really trying to hit down on what are these elements of faith we need to worry about. And I think first is that understanding of people who are bold about their faith. I think this is what Jonathan sees. Jonathan doesn't see, oh, this guy's mighty and therefore he can be a good henchman for me. Jonathan says, no, this guy looked at the entire army of Israel and said, if God is for us, then why are you cowards? These are the kind of people we need to look for. I think Jonathan also sees that David, like, I mean, Matt, put yourself in David's shoes. You kill the biggest, baddest dude anybody's ever seen. Are you walking back up to the king with the dude's head going, oh, here you go, O king. May I serve you, my king?
Yeah, probably not.
No, I'm not. I'm like, hey, you're with the chickens, aren't you? Well, guess what, buddy? There's a new rooster in town. And guess what? It's the fool who's got the Philistine's head, bruh. Like, I'm not taking second place to you. But David is a young man who is respectful. Again, if we're sitting there looking at people that we want to influence our kids, I was sitting in a high school basketball game, and there was a young man who is a leader of a church in our area. He had previously been at one of the high school games of the same team, and he was kicked out of the game. for saying something that the ref thought was vile enough to be kicked out. He was explaining to us why he refused to leave and why they had to threaten to call the police on him. And as he was explaining it to us, he made the phrase at one point, he said, "Well, I just wouldn't want my students to see me being escorted out. That's a really bad image." And as Mary and I were in the car talking about this, she said, "What do you think about that?" And my answer to her was, when I was as young and not self-assured as I am now, I would agree with that completely. She goes, "Well, what caused it to change?" And I said, "Because I realized that the second I show my students that I don't submit to authority, they'll never submit to me again." Now, first of all, I don't say things that get me kicked out of games.
That's probably a kicker for me.
Yeah, that's probably also helpful.
Yes.
But when I do mess up, I submit to authority. I immediately become repentant again, because I realize that's what I'm supposed to be known for. And that's what I'm trying to teach them. In the same way, when we're looking for family, friends, when we're looking for those adults, that you have to know that the people you're close to are often adults that your kids are going to go to when they have an issue with you.
Yep.
Now, we want to find people who respect authority then. We want to find people who are honorable. We want to find people who are people of faith. Because otherwise, if we just say, "Well, I'm going to get along with people I get along with," you know, Matt, you know who I am generally. I think most people who listen to this have probably figured out who I am. Me finding the next nearest guy who generally likes sports, has a slight Napoleon complex, and generally thinks of themselves as an alpha male, whether accurate or not, that guy is not always going to be the kind of guy I want my kids to be raised by.
Yep.
That is not the kind of guy that I really want my kids to be influenced by too much.
And that's why we're friends.
but I mean, you and I are friends, though, because we actually hit on the most important thing, and that's that we're both people of faith. As you know, those things may all be true about me, but they're all actually under the guise of my faith.
Yeah.
And this is significant because often those are the determining factors we select our friends on. The guys we hang out with at work, the people that we like to talk to, often have our interest in mind. But when we're talking about who we want to raise our family around, we're not talking about interest anymore. We're talking about belief and what we actually think. Because the converse to this as well, and the follow through, then I'll turn it over to you, Matt, is that what we see in these parents is also going to often be what they teach in their house. And never should you expect that your friends teach everything you teach perfectly. There is some beauty in the fact that you don't have just a rigid set of rules that everyone has to follow, but that you're allowed to do different things in discipleship.
Right.
But you have to agree on the big ticket things of what you believe, because otherwise you end up sending your kids over there when they're hanging out with their kids, and they come back having a belief system that doesn't match yours. But Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you have to be careful. Number one, a couple things. Number one, with the language that sometimes scripture uses, we need to be careful, kind of as a side thing, to where people can read this passage, especially, 1 Samuel 18, starting in verse 1, and apply our context to it of how some of these words are used today. That's not how you do biblical interpretation. You need to look at, what do these words mean in the context it was written in? And what does this look like? You know, what did it look like? When we look at verse 1, Tim, what version were you reading from, the ESV?
I was reading from the NASB. Would you believe that?
Ooh, NASB. I've got my trusty conservative Southern Baptist translation, CSB. And it reads, "When David had finished speaking with Saul, Jonathan was bound to David in close friendship." Though This is not a good translation, as if you would put it. I think it communicates the idea better. Because what it shows is it shows the context of what this was. And you can see that, you know, it continues on. He loved David as much as he loved himself. And it's, again, we need to look at what does this context look like. The Hebrew language is very, very poetic. It is very flowery. Sometimes scripture, especially in the Old Testament, takes a while to make a point. But it is that beauty of the journey. So what are these words that's being used here? Jonathan was bound to David in close friendship, and he loved him as much as he loved himself. What does this show? This shows what Jesus was talking about. Love the Lord with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. That is exactly what's going on here. This is not a case of a homosexual relationship.
Oh, yeah, no.
And this is what a lot of quote-unquote preachers nowadays are now trying to convince you of. But they do not understand ancient culture well. We can see that the bond that David has with Jonathan throughout, you know, David and Jonathan's life together, whether David is on the run or right now if he's at the palace with Saul. This is the kind of friendship that is created. It is a bond that is much deeper than just a surface level, hey man, how's it going? I'm doing pretty good. How are you? I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. All right, see you later. Like, that's how we treat a lot of our friendships today, if I'm being honest. We have a lot of people that we're acquaintances with. We are not friends. A joke I like to make, me and my roommate, at the seminary, we are good friends. But I always like to joke. I'd say something like pretty harsh in a joking way. He goes, wow, I thought we were friends. And I was like, no, we are roommates. We are not friends. but I mean, that's the way we need to live sometimes, is we need to recognize we're not friends with everyone we say we're friends with. Like, this is what friendship is. This is what mutual trust looks like. And you know, Tim, from example, this is what we've developed over the years. This is something, you know, the bond that you and I have is different between the bond that you and Mary have. It's
very much so.
There are some things you talk to Mary about, and there are some things you don't talk to Mary about, you talk to me about.
Correct.
It's just the nature of male-to-male friendships, male-to-female friendships, and then on the flip side, female-to-female relationships. There are some things you just don't talk to the other gender about because they don't really understand why you think that. Like, they don't understand, why does football matter so much to you? I don't know either. It just does. I cannot watch a single football game for the entire year and then watch the Super Bowl. And I understand how it works. That's just how my brain is wired. Why? Yep. That's just who I am. And that's the conversations Tim and I have. I did watch a lot of football this year. I'm not even going to lie. I'm not going to brush past that. But the relationships we have for our kids have to be, there has to be some thought put into it. And that's really the point we're trying to get across. Do they love the Lord? Would they be a benefit to your kid? Those are two simple questions. A lot of times we just go, do they love the Lord? Yes, here we go. Sometimes our brothers and sisters in Christ are not going to be the best example for our kids. It's just how it is. I love some of my Methodist friends. However, some Methodist friends are just going to be just that. We will not have a close relational bond like this because they're moving in a different direction than I'm comfortable with. Yep. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to put, you know, my family with under that, obviously I don't have a family. I'm just kind of making a point here. But it's important that we not only have similar faith, we have similar goals. Mm-hmm. What is your goal in parenting? Is your goal in parenting, they just got to make it through high school and then they'll be fine? Or is your goal in parenting, I don't want them to be set in their ways as they are right now. I want them to mature. I want them to grow in their faith, because that will benefit them much more than just creating these good social relationships.
Yeah. So I think then there's one other aspect to this and then we'll be done. And that is what I would just call the check for you as parents. Mm. Here's what I think happens most of the time. If you're not actively thinking, who am I befriending? Who are we making family friends, et cetera, et cetera, then you will more than likely make those decisions on either one of two bases, either proximity or personality.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make it with the people that you're around a lot, and you're going to make it with people that you get along with. Now, sometimes proximity is good. It can actually end you up in the right spot. Let's say you're around church people and they're really, you know, well-meaning church people, and they really are, you know, living out their faith. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it also puts you around people in the church who are fake. Mm-hmm. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, personality the same way. Sometimes it may get you to people who are the right sort of people. Other times it may get you to the wrong sort of people.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have to do is, when we look at our friends, we have to stop and say, okay, what causes me to be friends with these people? And what do I think they would tell my kid if my kid got mad at me?
Mm.
And when we ask ourselves that question, what would be their kind of advice? And if our answers are, I really don't know. I don't know that I've ever talked to them about an issue.
Mm.
Then we got to pause. Does it mean they're bad people? No, it just means you don't know them well.
Right.
We have to learn who they are and learn what they're about. And then in the turn, we can go, okay, now these are people that we do need to be friends with.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we sit there and we go, I know that they would not tell my kid what I want them to, then we have got to get them off of the fence.
Yep.
Our kids are our most valuable parts of our lives.
Yep.
And they deserve to be protected. And if you're the one who's saying, well, we're going to go out to dinner with these people, we're going to go over to their house, and then you don't trust the way that they deal with things, what you are effectively saying is, hey, I'm going to put you in danger for no obvious reason.
Yep.
Now, this is all, of course, predicated off of, you know, having good marriages, things like that. Because I recognize some people, you're friends with people because you're not friends with your spouse at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an issue there. But saying all that's good, then we have to have good people that we're around. So that's my last word, Matt. I do have a book that's not necessarily on topic, but I have a book suggestion.
Oh, snap. Let me say this real quick, though.
But yeah, you go ahead.
Yeah, so an example of this from my life would be a couple that were actually at the Super Bowl party that my parents hosted last night. It's a couple by the name of Rex and Christy. Tim, you know Rex. Rex was my youth pastor through high school. Yes. And what he did was something that I'm very grateful for. He listened to me because we had built that relationship. See, he and his family moved to my hometown of beautiful Atlanta, Texas, when I was in second grade. And me and his son became very good friends, and I was over at their house pretty often. But when Rex became my youth minister, there was already that relationship there that was established, number one, by my parents for inviting them over to our house. So I didn't meet Rex and Christy first. My parents met them first at church, became friends with them, and then invited them into our home. And so that was initiated by my parents, my mom and my stepdad. And then because of that, the relationship I had with Rex was very, very beneficial for me through high school, because I came to him with some issues that I was dealing with at the time, and he gave me some wise and biblical counsel. And through that, he's one of the people that influenced me to become a student minister, because, Tim, you know, Rex is just another dude.
Yep.
And he is one of the coolest just another dudes you'll ever meet. Unfortunately, he is a Kansas City Chiefs fan, so he was probably loving life last night. But it's because my parents took an interest in them. They saw that there was beneficial. They were on the same path that my family was going. And we became such good friends that Rex became instrumental in my life. I ended up working for him for 2 summers as the youth group intern while I was in college. And he gave me so much ministry experience, and he gave me the opportunity to fail. And that was something that I, you know, am very grateful for, because that's the kind of friends, parents, you need to find. And a lot of times they are at church. And if you're currently not in a church that you're surrounded by people you want your family to be around, I'm going to say something that's controversial, but find a new church. Plain and simple. What we need to do is, we don't need to find a new church just because we want to, you know, our family to be comfortable there. We need to find a new church because the church is your family. Your local church is your family. And we don't hold that high enough. Like, yes, we need to make sure that our pastor is presenting a very biblically grounded scriptural message. We need to make sure the worship music that's played isn't, you know, not kind of cerebral and out there, but it's worship filled, you know, scripture driven songs. But if the people we're surrounded by are jerks and do not fully embody what a Christian is, you don't need to be there. Because what you're doing is you're showing your kids, this is what a Christian looks like. And that's wrong. And that's a lot of our churches, unfortunately.
Yep.
And so what we need to do is what we're saying is, we're going against the mindset of just let your kids be friends with whoever. And this is going to take time and effort, which I know those are very limited resources we have. But if you truly love your family, and if you truly love the Lord, consider these things well. Tim, what you got?
Yeah, so not on these lines, but I mean, could definitely help if you have a kid who's in this. I am, probably 2/3 of the way through with this book. I'll finish it probably in the next night or so. And the book is entitled The Deconstruction of Christianity. Mm. What it is, why it's destructive, and how to respond. If you are sitting there, and Matt, as you know, the TikTok generation has made the terms deconstruction and ex-evangelical super, super popular.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting there and you say, I have a kid who's dealing with this, this is a book that you can read, and or you can actually even have your child read it. As I said, I'm about 2/3 of the way through. I think it's pretty well done. I have one minor sentence that I disagreed with in the entire thing. And I would probably chalk that up to they're trying to help soften a blow, you know, of a statement. So really, I like the way that it's done. I like the way it's thought out and methodical. I can give a report next week on exactly how it ends, but their understandings of who we are as people and what faith looks like and how we understand it are really, really good for having a discussion about deconstruction. So, Matt, that's what I got. You got any last words?
Nope.
All right, then. Well, that, I believe, has been this week's episode of Tuning the Bow. Until next week, bye.
Bye, everybody.